Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, we're at the Egan Civic and Convention Center, where Alaska's Governor Sean Parnell is addressing the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. Recorded on Monday, September 14th, Governor Sean Parnell speaking on his administration's agenda, the state's current and upcoming budget, and OCS development in Alaska, is coming up next on KSKA after the news.
Welcome to today's Make It Monday Forum. My name is Tony Izzo. I'm an Anchorage businessman and chair of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. Our topic today, in 2009, offshore drilling, natural resource development, and tightening state budget have been issues Alaskans have been watching carefully. As state government prepares for a new fiscal year, what priorities are at the top of our list? Today, Governor Sean Parnell is here to discuss his upcoming administration's agenda, the state's current and upcoming budget, Outer Continental Shelf, or OCS, development, and touch on other issues affecting Alaska's business community. I'm sure many of you will have questions, which is why we provided the little slips of paper. They should be blank, and you should find them at each of your tables. Sometimes we get typed questions, and I always wonder how that happens. During today's presentation, please jot down your questions on the slip of paper, wave them high in the air. A staff member will come by and collect them for me to read. At the end of the presentation, we'll get a chance to go through and ask the governor as many questions as time will allow. Before we get started with today's presentation, and I brought with me actually something I wanted to read today that I didn't tell anybody about. This is a Walmart receipt. It's kind of yellow because I found it on my windshield one day. And this is a good 2 or 3 years old. The date on the back is May 7 of 2007. And one day after a soccer game, I was taking my daughter home. And when I pulled into the driveway, I found this Walmart receipt sticking on my windshield wiper. And so I thought, what is somebody leaving some advertisements or spam or something. And so I get out of the car and I go to pull this thing off to throw it in the trash. And on the other side, it says, "Hello, the door of my car swung open and got caught in the wind. It hit your rear driver's side wheel well, and it might have scratched the paint. Please let me know if this costs you so I can make it right. Regards, Sean." And there's a phone number I won't read.
Thank you.
Great. Well, I had never seen a Sean at the soccer games. I saw John Tracy there because there was always a group that would follow John around on the sidelines, and I was not a groupie. I liked Mr. Tracy, but I didn't know him. And I thought, well, gee, if there's a Sean, I didn't know any Sean at the soccer games. So I called the number the next day thinking, well, this was a really nice thing to do, and I'll leave the message that said, yeah, I've already got enough scratches, and I'm just so pleased somebody would do the right thing and leave a message that I wanted to let you know thanks. But that's it. We don't need to pursue anything else. And so I did call the number on the Walmart receipt, and I get a message that says, "Hello, you have reached Sean and Sandy Parnell." And I stuttered for a few minutes thinking that that fender really did need to be replaced on the car. Actually, I stuttered and said thank you, but no thanks, and I really appreciate the note, and thanks for doing the right thing. I'm not sure if we've ever talked about that, Governor, but Governor Sean Parnell is Alaska's 10th governor. He was elected as Alaska's lieutenant governor in November 2006, and ascended to the office of governor in July of this year. Governor Parnell was elected to the Alaska House of Representatives in 1992 at the age of 29. He was reelected in 1994 and served one term in the Alaska State Senate from 1996 to 2000. I believe, if my math is correct or my memory, we saw oil prices down in the single digits per barrel in some of those years. The governor served on the House Finance Committee, the Senate Finance Committee, the Energy Council, and chaired numerous budget subcommittees. He has been an attorney since 1987 and is admitted to practice law in Alaska and Washington, D.C. Sean Parnell married his wife Sandy in 1987. They reside in Anchorage with their two daughters. Today, Governor Sean Parnell is here to discuss his upcoming administration's agenda, the state's current and upcoming budget, outer continental shelf development, and touch on other issues affecting Alaska's business community. As speaking for the Chamber of Commerce, I can say that all of these subjects are of critical importance to us. We're very concerned on the board about not only just the economy, but how do we go forward and create a positive business climate going forward so we have some optimism about where this economy might go. And so with that, ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Governor Sean Parnell.
Had I known it was Tony's car, I might not have left such a kind note, but no. That was wonderful. Thank you for that reminder. I didn't recall that. I spent many years going twice a week to the soccer fields. Our girls just happen to be on different teams, but thank you for that memory, I think. You know, it's great to be back with the chamber. Last week, I had the opportunity to spend a couple days in the interior moose hunting. And if any of you have been moose hunting, you know that there are successful hunts, and each one of us has a different definition of success when it comes to a moose hunt. You know, some of us go for a couple days, and if you don't have to gut and pack one out, it's a successful hunt. I got to stay 2 days and with some wonderful people. Didn't have success then, but 3 hours after I left, they got a bull. So I think the key is to have me along for a little while and then leave. You know, I also got to visit a couple great places. I got to visit a couple gold mines that are small operations in the interior, but very important to those families and people who are employed there. Got to see some of the historic trails that prospectors early on forged, as well as the trails between the villages that are used to this day by four-wheelers and snow machines in the winter. Saw some fish wheels with the remains of salmon, you know, and the last salmon of this season as people are putting those up. Colors were golden. The views were just beautiful and expansive, and it really spoke to the hope and the hope of Alaska and the indomitable spirit of Alaskans that from this land, over the years, over thousands of years, people here have forged a future. And that's really what we're here for. You know, many of you are familiar with the Cuddy family, and in this town, Warren Cuddy purchased First National Bank of Anchorage in 1941, and a decade later, his son Dan Cuddy assumed his role as bank president, and decades later, that mantle passed to the next generation. First National Bank weathered economic highs and lows. In fact, in the mid-80s, when other banks were shutting down, First National moved out across other communities in Alaska. Like other Alaskans, they faced many challenges, economic, geographic, and geologic. You know, in the Good Friday earthquake of 1964, in the aftermath of that quake, the Cuddies announced the addition of 8 stories to their undamaged bank building in downtown Anchorage and the installation of the city's first elevator. I think those are pretty bold moves in the face of that catastrophe. Shift gears with me now to another story of an Alaskan. In 1937, at the age of 20, Wally Martins took a train from Iowa to Seattle. He got on the SS Aleutian and took that steamship to Seward and then came to Anchorage. He joined the Alaska Territorial Guard in 1941. After World War II, Wally worked as a delivery driver for Alaska Cleaners. And just 1 year later, in 1946, he and a partner, Frank Harris, purchased Alaska Cleaners, thanks to a little help from the Cuddy family at First National. Wally worked long hours to keep the business afloat. He gradually hired more staff. And after the original location was damaged in the 64 quake, they built a new facility to house their operation, again with loans from First National Bank. In 1967, much of the new building was damaged and dry cleaning equipment destroyed in a fire that temporarily put them out of business. But they rebuilt the building. They replaced the equipment. It wasn't long before they were up and running again. And in 1984, to accommodate some of that growth, they put together the financing and building at Arctic and Fireweed that's there today. 60-plus years later, the Martins family, they've recently sold Alaska Cleaners. But the moral of these stories, pretty simple. Work hard here. Plan for the future. Be community-minded. Take hold of opportunity and hold on for dear life. I mean, those are the hallmarks of Alaskans, and those are the hallmarks of many of you in this room. I only told those two stories, and there are many others in this room and in this town and in this area. We still have that pioneering, that entrepreneurial spirit. There's no question that exists here. If it wasn't, you know, we wouldn't be able to live the dreams that we have for us and for our people. Alaska has always been a place to sow and harvest dreams. 10 years from now, or thinking bigger picture, 50 years from now, at the 100th year anniversary of our statehood, I want it said that Alaska is still a land of promise, a land that inspires and grows dreams. I want it said in Alaska that our young people, when they're 16 or 20 or 25, that they can see and seize opportunity here for themselves as well. I want it to be a place for owning a small business, like you've heard Coastal Place. I want it to be a place where you can own a small business, increase your financial security, and have something meaningful in your life because you helped create it, and you did create it. I want it to be a place where larger businesses look at Alaska as a great place to invest and create new jobs here. That's what we're about. But in order to do that, there are some economic challenges we must face, and that we will continue to face for some time. The only way over that mountain is to summit together. I've called on our legislators to work together and to work with me and my administration to rise to the challenge together. One place where principled cooperation bodes well for Alaska jobs and families is in the state budget. I've been clear about our commitment to fiscal responsibility. We'll work to provide a stable investment climate that promotes private sector investment and job creation. We're going to do it by maintaining fiscal discipline. We'll find efficiencies where possible. We'll make budget reductions where practical and sustainable. And lastly, we'll focus on the prudent use of budget reserves. Careful planning to manage a shortfall in the short term is the key to maneuvering these tricky economic times while ensuring long-term stability and opportunity. And fortunately, pinching pennies is nothing new to me. Back in the 90s, as Tony mentioned, I had the privilege of serving as the Senate Finance co-chair when oil was at $9 a barrel. We did it in those days by focusing on those timeless fiscal principles that I've set forth, and we set spending priorities on education and public safety and transportation, those core functions of government, and that's where our focus is again. With the downturn in oil prices and an uncertain global economic future, Alaska is fortunate to have savings accounts to draw on. We have about $7 billion in our Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. We have $1 billion in our Statutory Budget Reserve Fund. Used wisely and assuming oil prices don't take a plunge, we ought to be able to stretch that for some time. There are some big challenges to consider as we build the budget, like budget items that automatically increase each year because the formula increases are set in statutes. And this is where I wanted to just depart from my notes for a minute and tell you why it's important to recognize these increases, because unless we deal with the increases at a statutory level, they're going to happen. And I'm here to inform you about some of those increases. So something that's important to all of us, education funding. Built-in formula increases in K-12 education will grow state expenditures in the next fiscal year by a projected $59 million. That's about $1,250,000 in terms of that, $250 million in terms of that budget. It's the K-12 budget is now just over $1 billion. Then there's Medicaid. The increasing numbers of Alaskans eligible for Medicaid services will increase the cost of the program in fiscal year 2011 by an estimated $48 million. And if the federal government fails to take action to maintain its current rate of reimbursement by December 2010, add another $56 million, just under existing statutes. So these two items alone, K-12 education and Medicaid, could total $163 million in increases. those two items jumped the operating budget by 3.8% over fiscal year 2010. Then when you add in already negotiated labor contracts and some of the other, our Office of Management and Budget calls those big rocks, those automatic increases, unless legislatively you can take action to do something with it, we're talking a 5 to 6% increase before the agencies ask for their allocations. So clearly, we have to find a way to enforce budget discipline and provide a rational way to make budget decisions. As we work on the fiscal year 2011 budget, you all in Alaska will see me focused on something I call results-based budgeting. At my first budget meetings with the cabinet, I asked the commissioners to come without staff. You should have seen their mouths drop. Come without your number crunchers, come without your accountants. Just come talk with me. Tell me what your core constitutional and statutory missions are. Tell me what you are doing, what results you're trying to achieve for the public. We're focused on using Alaskans' funds more effectively rather than trying to justify more funding and bigger budgets. I've asked legislators to join me in this. I've asked them to sit in their budget subcommittees and ask our agencies, what results are you achieving for the public? How safe are our roads? How good an education are our kids getting for the dollars spent? And what measures are you using to determine it? Those are the questions I've encouraged and challenged legislators to ask our departments. We're now pointed to a release of the Office of the Governor's budget by December 15, as required by law. So you'll be hearing a lot more about that effort. Now, I can't give a talk on the current economy and upcoming budget without talking about Alaska's bread and butter, responsible development of Alaska's vast array of natural resources. With upwards of 82% of our general fund dollars coming from the petroleum industry, we're going to continue to strongly support those jobs. Tomorrow, I travel to Washington, D.C. for meetings with Interior Secretary Salazar, with the White House, and with others. These meetings are to back up letters I sent last week officially stating my strong support for Alaska's Outer Continental Shelf development and urging the Obama administration's support for a 5-year leasing plan for the development of Alaska's oil and gas. And on your tables, I want to just say thank you to the Anchorage Chamber for also endorsing our position and moving forward on Alaska's OCS. On your tables, there should be a card that you can fill out and send to the Department of the Interior as well, or you could fill it out, I believe, and give it to Dave Harbor on the way out the door if you'd like. I'd like him to take care of it. We're going to stay in full court press mode for as long as it takes to open the OCS. We believe that Alaska's OCS contains 27 billion barrels of oil and 130 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. Those are conservative estimates. But even those conservative estimates amount to 30% of America's oil and gas. That would provide jobs and opportunities for a lot of people for a long time. Beyond development of Alaska's OCS, I see real progress and real potential for the Alaska Gas Pipeline Project. I'm a commercial attorney by trade. I actively practiced law in Alaska for about 14 of the last 22 years. And one thing I know about commercial ventures, particularly the big, worthwhile ones, they take time to bake. Parties spend money to analyze project viability. Parties negotiate. They hit roadblocks. They figure ways up, around, or through those roadblocks. The parties pick up partners along the way. They spend more money to study and scope the project. They figure out new approaches. They then pick up even more partners along the way, all leading, hopefully, to a project sanctioning decision. For companies, commercializing North Slope Gas is, in part, about reaching that project sanctioning decision. It's about milestones on the path to project sanction. And looking back, we've made some real progress. First, the state put real skin in the game, under the Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act. We said we'll fund up to $500 million to a project that moves in Alaskans' interests. And we also pledged royalty inducements to companies that participate in the open season. TransCanada put real skin in the game on the Alaska Gas Line project, pledging that they will move the project on committed timelines on terms agreeable to the state. Exxon moved in to partner with TransCanada, deciding that they could move the project forward with TransCanada. They're spending real money in this effort. BP and Conoco moved together in a project they called Denali, spending real money on a field season and follow-up analysis. So let's look at the milestones or markers ahead to those project sanctioning decisions corporate boards make. One milestone, under AGEA, the state must put out its royalty inducement regulations before the open season, scheduled for the summer of 2010. Those royalty inducement regulations will enable parties that participate in the summer 2010 open season to gain valuable changes to their leases for participating in next summer's open season. TransCanada and Exxon say they will have cost estimates during the first quarter of 2010. That's another milestone. The summer of 2010 open season, that's another milestone. These are all mile markers or milestones on the way to a project sanctioning decision. Now, in the course of a commercial dance of this size and scope, patience pays off. Those who call on the state to rush now into negotiations with producers over gas taxes are naive. Pushing to negotiate with four companies in two separate projects would add to the state's cost in the project, unduly complicate an already complex playing field, and delay the project. Those legislators who think they might file tax legislation at the start of session without any commercial alignment of the private parties, that would add more uncertainty and complexity to the equation and diminish our chances for a gas pipeline. Between now and the open season, I've said it before and I'm going to say it again, the biggest obstacle facing the Alaska Gas Line project is the lack of commercial alignment between private companies. Where you have TransCanada and Exxon as a team and BP and Conoco as a team, the state would spend all its energy and value running from party to party, trying to individually satisfy four separate companies. As a state, we've tried that tactic before in 2004 and 2005. That tactic failed. The information that becomes available as a result of the 2010 open season will be valuable to the state in assessing what, if any, changes are needed in the state's fiscal system. Again, the open season, it's a milestone. It's not a project sanctioning decision. It's not the place where companies commit billions of dollars of their own corporate money. That's the project sanctioning decision later on. For these reasons, it would be premature for the state to negotiate or consider changes in our fiscal system until sufficient alignment is reached between commercial parties on a project. But the state, under AGEA, is required to offer royalty inducements. You're going to see that coming. We'll watch with keen interest as companies reach the milestones of cost estimates in the months ahead. The Alaska Gas Line project members, TransCanada and Exxon, should be in private negotiations with Conoco and BP. That we will not see that happen in the public arena. Next summer, the open season will produce that another milestone of progress. After the open season, another milestone is a FERC certificate. All before a board of one of these major companies is likely to sanction an expenditure of its capital to put pipe in the ground. And so it all comes back. It comes back to Alaska's economy and to our families. The immediate future of the state involves daily working a fiscal policy that will position us for economic growth. The extended future of Alaska is in significant part a gas pipeline, an OCS, and yes, ultimately, ANWR development. But it's not only these, because the work of state government includes supporting and encouraging those other industries, the small businesses we've heard about, tourism, mining, fishing, timber, all of our many excellent industries and small businesses. So you can count on me to continue fighting for Alaska's present and for our future, while we honor the past. Like the Cuddies, the Martins, and many others, we too must work hard, plan for the future, be community-minded, and take hold of the opportunities that come our way. Alaskans, we are all still pioneers at heart. And together, we're gonna forge ahead, we're gonna break this trail, because if we're willing to do it together, we will succeed. We're gonna have that prosperous future that each of us wants and that each of us wants to create for ourselves. I thank you, and Tony, are you going to come up and lead the questions?
We can do it two ways.
Because I'm happy to take questions, as long as they're not the typewritten ones.
What I would suggest is that I'll... Can everyone hear me? Is the mic on? Okay. That if you'd like, you stay at the podium.
Sure.
Now for some questions. We have a diverse group of questions. The first, I chose it first because they put their name on it. Your thoughts on Chacachamna, the hydro project?
I appreciate having that as a question. My administration's energy plan it's got four prongs. It's basically traditional sources of energy, oil and gas, and we've got initiatives there. Second, The second prong is where Chacachamna fits. It's renewable projects. And we are in the process of evaluating the viability of a project like Chacachamna. That's something that could be built into the budget. It needs to be part of an overall plan for the rail belt, and it's definitely something that's being considered. Let me finish. So I gave you two pillars: traditional, renewable. Third, conservation and efficiency efforts. We've got initiatives in those areas, and then also assistance for those in need when it comes to energy. So we'll go ahead to the next one.
Thank you, Governor. While we're on energy, the question states: you mentioned OCS. What is the state doing to encourage sustainable energy source development along the same lines?
Well, again, that fits along with the renewable and alternative forms of energy. That's the second prong. But also, it includes natural gas. I mean, natural gas is clearly a huge source. Recently, today is his first day. I asked Jean Terrio, a former senator from North Pole, to join this administration and to be the governor's liaison when it comes to renewable and alternative energy. You'll remember that we had, through the last year and a half, there was an effort that Steve Hagenson at the Alaska Energy Authority did good work on, put together an energy inventory for around the state. So no matter what village you live in around the state or what city you live in, you have now a catalog of all the energy sources available to you. And I am working to drive communities to make decisions for themselves about what energy sources they can access. If they need help from the state, they can get it. Jean Terrio is that liaison now with them in coordination with DNR, Alaska Energy Authority. So for example, in the Northwest Arctic Borough, that energy inventory indicates that there are natural gas deposits close at hand. If the Northwest Arctic Borough, from the ground up, with the companies and the people and the local governments there, can come together on a plan on how to access that gas, and if it makes sense, we can build incentives from a state policy perspective that would entice or encourage a small exploration company to come in and explore for gas. Those are the kinds of initiatives in the traditional area as well as in the renewable and alternative forms that we are looking at as a state and willing to participate in. How are you prioritizing those?
I'm trying to categorize them. I
okay.
have some. Since we're on energy, and then there is an education question and a couple of transportation questions.
Good.
Do you have a preferred off?
No, you just keep them coming.
Okay.
It's all right.
Okay. Since Alaska is the energy state with three in-state refineries, why do we continue to import refined fuels such as gasoline, jet fuel, diesel, et cetera? And I'm going to really fight the urge to answer parts of these myself.
Why don't you go ahead, Tony? All fuels from all sources. Go ahead. Jump in there, Tony, anywhere.
Well, what an opportunity.
I've told my administration and members of my administration that importing fuel is the last of options for Alaskans. I mean, I want our resources developed and utilized for Alaskans. That's our focus. That's who we are.
Okay, since the door was open to crack, I will say
no more than 10 minutes, okay?
Now, very briefly, that some fuels are imported, for instance, propane, because of the state in Cook Inlet, for instance, only half the state's propane is available because of the purity of the natural gas in Cook Inlet, whereas North Slope gas is very dense, and there's the potential for a lot of propane. It's just access to markets. And I think that to this question, it does come down to what is the consumer willing to pay? And I know a very difficult issue that is being discussed, for instance, would be importation of LNG. Would someone rather pay X dollars for imported LNG, or would they prefer to pay X plus dollars for in-state gas? And it's going to be a tough choice that we'll face in the future. Next question.
Thank you. Can I give you another question?
Sure.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm not so sure that went over okay, so I'll get back on script here. What will it take to commit to building a road to resources to Umiat?
That's a great question. There's at about $3 million a mile, I believe, 75 miles, $215-220 million. That's a real option. That road to Umiak can open up a lot of resources, not just to companies, but also access by Alaskans, whether it's recreational or state land access as well. So what it's going to take is a cooperative effort from my office as well as the legislature making something like that happen. That's one of those legacy projects that ought to happen, and it's something that we are looking seriously at. And here's the rub, folks. I'm just going to tell you straight. I'm going to roll out my budget on or before December 15, and you can bet that there are going to be legislators who will say, oh, he's increasing the budget, 5%. And I just talked to you about how automatic increases are 5 to 6%. So on the one hand, I am working to restrain the growth of government spending and promote individual liberty. On the other hand, people say, well, you can't count the capital budget because that's, that's really an investment. I believe that with all my heart. I mean, the Transcontinental Railroad was built with a huge investment, and that sprung up economies all across central and western United States, and towns sprung up from that. Roads and infrastructure projects do lead to economic activity and economic and jobs for Alaskans. Very important. But I don't want legislators screaming at me about increasing the budget if they're not willing to step forward and build infrastructure projects. So I'm willing to work on the road to Umiak. That's something that's a high priority for us. We're also looking, frankly, at the road across to Nome and what that might do for opening up the mineral resources of our state. That's a much more expensive proposition. That's been talked about, though, for 110 years, as far as I can tell. I just learned this outside Manly the other day. So we are looking at a number of different options, the road to Umiak being one, that looking for those options that can increase economic activity.
I think in keeping with that trend, this question states, given your recent directive to your cabinet to prioritize only their legislative mission and objectives, what can Alaskans expect to see regarding a decrease in some of the state's current services?
I think what Alaskans see first, and the thing that I've noticed in the budget meetings that I had with my commissioners is when, I'll give you an example, when the Attorney General says we're going to do something about X and Y in the Department of Law, and my Public Safety Commissioner, Joe Masters, can say, I hadn't even considered that, but we can do Z and A related to X and Y that will save us. You don't have to ask for that money, and we can save those dollars. You won't necessarily see that, but because I'm working to break down the silos of communication between our agencies, you'll see that better coordination and better communication leads to lower expenditures over time.
Next question. Given gas reserves declining in South Central, what is your administration's policy or policies, that was in parentheses, so that can help resolve the pending shortage?
Those are important questions for all of us here, and it comes back to our overall energy plan. And Tony, I know you're serving, I believe, on the mayor's task force. I appreciate very much that Mayor Sullivan has impaneled that task force, and I am communicating with him about that. I mean, we're going to do everything we can to encourage those traditional supplies from Cook Inlet. We have a state plan in place to take conservation measures in our own state buildings. We'll be asking Alaskans to do the same. I know that the municipality will be doing the same. And I've also asked the producers in the region whether they're going to be able to meet their gas supply contracts for the winter. So far, I've not had one tell me that they're not going to, but clearly, if there's an extended period of time of cold, that will be a concern. So that's a high priority topic for us, as it is for the municipality.
Let's see, I think this is probably the last one here. How do you propose to meet the demands of No Child Left Behind and workforce development goals while cutting education budgets?
Well, number one, I didn't say we're cutting education budgets. Last I checked, we increased education by $150 million these last 2 years, so nobody can complain we're cutting education budgets. This year, I just told you that the automatic increase is over $50 million. So please don't take away from here that I'm advocating cutting the education budget. It wasn't my intention. I told you my intent was to inform you about automatic increases to the budget, and that unless we address those down the road, we are going to have these automatic increases, and I have to work to better collaborate among agencies to get reductions in other areas. I've also said that my priorities for spending, education, public safety, and transportation. So my intent was clearly to inform, not to advocate cuts in K-12 education. But thank you.
Governor, we have actually two more.
But they just appear?
They did. They just... and I feel obligated because I see city officials in the room to ask this question. Like the state, well, I'll put this in my own words. The state is facing budget challenges.
That's his privilege, isn't it?
State is facing budget challenges. So too is Anchorage and other communities across the state. What is your position on revenue sharing?
I met with, I've made it my habit, and in fact, this morning I did just as well, met with community members from across the state, both rural and urban. I've met with Alaska Municipal League members. I've met with city mayors, borough mayors, and I have assured them that I intend to fund that $60 million level of revenue sharing that has been funded. So I don't intend to cut that source off from local governments. I've also just opened that door to discussion with local governments to say, you know, where are your needs? What are your greatest concerns, and how can we meet them together? So that's something that I've done as well. I appreciate your attention and your questions. Thank you for not submitting typewritten questions, which would have been produced from outside the room, but I do appreciate the candor and the nature of the questions. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA. This week, you heard Alaska's Governor Sean Parnell addressing the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce at the Egan Civic and Convention Center. Recorded on Monday, September 14th, Governor Parnell spoke on his administration's agenda, the state's current and upcoming budget, and outer continental shelf development. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans on our website at kska.org, where you can also find links to all of the local groups featured on the show each week. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to kska.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening. And a special thanks to Scott Rohde at KENI 650 AM Radio in Anchorage, who provided audio for this week's edition of Addressing Alaskans.